Good evening. This is Switchboard on Vermont Public Radio. Our program is made possible by a grant from the Lintelak Foundation. I'm Steve Zind. When George Aiken's political career began, many Vermonters were still without electricity in their homes. Over the span of that career, much changed in the state and in the country. There were wars in Europe, Korea, and Vietnam. The atomic age was born. The Red Scare and the civil rights movement came to pass, and presidents came and went, six of them, one who resigned in disgrace. As a senior senator and as a man with a reputation for common sense and fairness, Aiken was in close proximity to many historic events and the people who shaped them. Tonight on Switchboard, we welcome Lola Aiken, the wife of the late senator and someone who worked closely with him during those years in Washington. Lola Aiken, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. Here's our phone number, and as always on Switchboard, we welcome calls, comments, questions for Lola Aiken, 1-800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211, our toll-free service provided by Long Distance by Cellular One. Perhaps you have questions about George Aiken's role in the political events of the last half of the 20th century, about Lola Aiken's own opinion of those years or of current events, or maybe you've got your own anecdotes or personal experiences with George Aiken that you'd like to share with us. 1-800-639-2211. George Aiken has passed into legend for Vermonters at this point. He, in a way, he's larger than life and has a reputation as infallible, essentially. I wonder if there is anything about the image we have of George Aiken that's not quite on the mark.
Strangely enough, I think the governor is even more loved now than he was at the time that he was in the Senate. I think the more history takes a look at him, he gets better and better and better. And I think while they understood him while he was in the Senate, they really appreciate him now because the Senate and the Congress is so different than it was way back.
You know, we should start by explaining that he preferred to be called Governor Aiken, although we think of him as a senator. He was governor of Vermont prior to that. Why did he prefer governor?
Well, I forgot that I called him the governor. He told me once that when you were governor, you knew the next day whether what you did was right or wrong. And in the Senate, he said it takes 50 years for people to decide whether it's right or wrong. I think there's something to it. Also, he loved the closeness to the state and to the people. He felt isolated when he was in the mm-hmm. Senate. And I think that's understandable because I know when it was time to come home, I was glad to come home.
So as listeners hear us talk this evening and refer to Governor Aiken, we're actually talking about Senator
the
Aiken
Senator.
As well. He was first elected, to go back to the beginning of his political career, to the Vermont legislature back in 1931. 2 years later, he was Speaker of the House. I think a year after that, he was Lieutenant Governor. 2 years after that, he was Governor. And then in 1940, he was off to the Senate. It's sort of a meteoric rise. Was he a politically ambitious person?
I think it all started when he was in Putney. He was on the school board for many years, I think 15. He was moderator in Putney. But he said what really got him started and helped him along was he had the Putney nursery. He said he automatically had 15,000 Vermont voters.
The Putney Nursery?
Yes, the Aiken Nursery.
Oh, okay. So just from people he knew through that?
Customers.
Uh-huh, customers.
Customers. And he said so he had 15,000 voters before he even started.
Were there issues, you know, so his political career begins in 1931. By 1940, he's well known enough, popular enough to be elected U.S. Senator. Over that period of time, those 9 years, what made him so popular with Vermont voters?
I did not know the governor until I went to Washington with him. I did not know him at that point. I met him on the way to Washington. I was invited to go on the staff by his top aide, Gene Douglas. And I think in reviewing his that period, he was very much interested in rural areas getting electricity. That's a great help. he had a lot of opposition, too. The conservative Republicans didn't want him and put opposition up to him. I don't know why he, when you stop and think of it, how did he make it? You know, he came from a very small little town, 1,800 people, I think. It's amazing that he could become, he was defeated the first time he ran. But it's interesting that he could become Speaker of the House, Lieutenant Governor, Governor. And then Flanders ran against him, and yet he could win the Senate and be there 34 mm-hmm. years. And they still tried to defeat him when he was in the Senate.
You went to work for the senator very early.
Within 1941. January 7th.
And you worked in his office, really, for his entire 35-year senatorial career.
I was the lowest paid person. I was the last one on that staff because the governor kept on Senator Gibson's staff. And So slowly, during the war, his top aide left and went into the Navy, and he hired a lawyer, and then the lawyer went on to something else. And by that time, I was sort of going up the ladder, and finally he said to me one day, "You're doing the work, you might as well get the title and the pay." So that's how I became administrative assistant.
One of the interesting things I understand is that George Aiken did not have a Vermont office as our congressional
right.
representatives do today. How did he feel he stayed in touch then with his constituents?
He never wanted a Vermont office. He said if people wanted to talk to him, they could call him direct. He did not want an intermediary.
In other words, he wanted to be able to talk to people. Was he that accessible that you could?
Oh, yes. They all knew he got there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and the telephone started ringing at 7 o'clock in the morning. He did not want them to have to call a Vermont office, then the Vermont office to relay what this person... He wanted to personally talk to the person, and then he would ask them to please write the request in writing so that he could have exactly what they wanted. No, he wanted that closeness.
And I understand part of your job was making sure that that mail was answered very promptly.
You bet. You bet. When I took over as AA, I wanted all mail answered within 48 hours. And if they couldn't give the person an answer, acknowledge it so that the person would know they're working on it. So she would be relieved or he would be relieved because somebody's working on the problem. I think that actually his staff kept him reelected because they were all Vermonters and they broke their neck to do things for Vermonters.
Here's our number again at Switchboard, 1-800-639-2211, as we talk about the late Senator George Aiken, 35 years, one of Vermont's senators in Washington, and prior to that, governor, lieutenant governor, and a state representative in Vermont. 1-800-639-2211. Perhaps you have questions or comments for Lola Aiken about George Aiken's political career, or you have some anecdotes and personal stories about George Aiken you'd like to share. Let's go to the phones and talk to Leeds in Berlin. Hi, Leeds.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Lola is somebody that I often eat breakfast with.
You bet.
And you guys have been talking about keeping in touch with the populace and how he communicated with the people that elected him. And if I remember right, he had a very interesting way of eating breakfast and communicating with his people in person. And I thought maybe you'd like to talk about that for a minute, where he ate and stuff like that.
Thanks, Leeds.
Leeds, he loved the diners, and he would have loved being at the coffee corner at 9 o'clock in the morning. I think when we were campaigning that we didn't miss a darn diner in the whole state of Vermont. And the minute he would walk into a diner, everybody would want to talk politics. And that's where a lot of his votes came from, because people could talk with the governor. And not only that, Leeds, if he was walking down the street, there were always people walking along with him. He was a people person.
Leeds, thanks for the call. Let's go to Dave in Montpelier. Hi, Dave.
Hello. Hi, Lola. How are you?
That's got to be Dave Kelly.
Yes, it is. And I have two questions. My first question, of all of the people you've known in Washington, especially the people that most of us would consider famous, who were the few people you liked the very best? And then my second question, of all the time you spent there, what would you say was the governor's toughest decision in Washington, D.C.?
The three people that I not only knew well, but loved them dearly, when I married the governor, the three senators that really became my closest friends were Senator Ribicoff of Connecticut, Senator Stu Symington of Missouri, and Senator Bill Fulbright of Arkansas. And even after the governor died, I remember Bill Fulbright calling me, and I asked him where he was calling from, and he said, Brattleboro. And I said, what are you doing in Brattleboro? Because at that point, I was in Montpelier. And he said, my bride wanted to come up and see the experiment in international living. And he said, Lola, I couldn't come to Vermont without calling you. They were my three favorite. I think what was the hard one of the hardest things for the governor to do, they had a right-to-work bill in the Senate. And he sat next to Senator Taft of Ohio. And Senator Taft told the governor that if he would vote for that right-to-work bill and there was something wrong with it, he promised he would put in an amendment. And the sideline to that is that Vic Murky was in the governor's office for a month as an intern. And the governor gave him as his first assignment to go out and get all the reasons against the right-to-work bill. And Vic was a very liberal reporter, and he went off with a great big smile to get all he could against right-to-work.
Tell us what the right-to-work bill involved.
Well, it would touch the union members, and they didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So he came back, and the governor said, now go and get me all the arguments for it. And Vic Murky said, Gov. And the governor says, well, there's usually two sides to a bill. The governor ended up voting for it. And then when Senator Taft did try to put in amendments, union leaders got people to vote against it so they could lambaste him.
Dave, thanks for the call. Senator Jeffords, as you know, Lola Aiken, cited George Aiken, among others, Bob Stafford, Ralph Flanders, as models and sort of guiding lights, I guess, in his decision to leave the Republican Party mm-hmm. last year and become an independent. Yet George Aiken himself, despite his squabbles within the party, voted pretty true to the Republican line and stayed in the party.
He was a moderate. Uh-huh. He was a moderate. Actually, he was a moderate.
So was James Jeffords right in citing Aiken as someone who basically would have supported his decision?
I don't know, because the governor would not have left the party. The governor had no trouble with the conservatives. As a matter of fact, the governor got along beautifully with the Democrats and the conservatives and pretty much got what he wanted when there was something he really wanted. But I never heard, the governor never argued about a person's right to vote the way they wanted. One time I remember I was annoyed at Senator Goldwater on a vote. And he said to me, well, I might have voted that way if I lived in Arizona. No, he didn't get too excited, but he never would have left the party. He had no trouble with it.
There were times, though, Joe McCarthy, for example, during that era in the 50s, I get the sense in reading about it that Governor Aiken sort of was very reluctant and it was a difficult step for him to actually in 1954 vote to censure Senator McCarthy.
Yes, it was. Not only that, but Joe McCarthy had a committee meeting directly across from our office. And Yes, it was hard. It was hard for Governor to censor.
Did you know Joseph McCarthy?
Yeah.
What was he like?
And actually, the people that knew him liked him. And not only that, little kids would follow him around. He was wonderful to young people.
So there was this other side to him?
Oh, yeah. There is always another side. I liked Nixon. And somebody said to me, well, I don't understand that. I said, if Nixon had had top aides who knew the Washington scene, knew the system, they would have said, look, you're not going to win this. He was a much different person when you knew him. I liked him a lot.
In what ways? Because likable is not a word that would come to mind when you say Richard Nixon.
I took my oldest nephew to the White House one night to pick up the governor, and we were sitting in the car, and an aide came out and said, why don't you come in? And he took my nephew around to where the dishes were and things like that. And my nephew turned to him, and he said, of all the presidents you've worked for, who did you like the best? He said, Nixon. And that surprised my nephew, and he said, why? He said, Nixon not only knew us by name, but knew about our families. And he said, some of them would walk by us and wouldn't even see us. So there was a side. And of course, he was a Yankee fan, too, and I was a Yankee fan. So whenever I saw him, he'd say, well, how's our team going?
Here's our number, 1-800-639-2211, a conversation with Lola Aiken this evening on Switchboard. Let's go to Brandon and to Benny. Hi, Benny. Welcome to the program. Benny? Or do we have Gordon? Or neither?
Yes, this is Gordon Hayward speaking.
Thank you, Gordon. Go ahead.
Lola, this is Gordon Hayward calling. I live in Westminster West, right next to Putney.
You bet.
I'm very interested in the fact that Mr. Aiken started or was part of the Putney Nursery. And I think listeners down in the southern part of the state would be very interested to know about Governor Aiken's role at the Putney Nursery. Did he start it?
And let me tell you, yes, Gordon.
And also a little bit about Alice Holloway, if you remember.
Oh, yes,
Alice.
I knew her, too. The governor and Bill Darrell Sr. started the Aiken Nurseries with, I think, $100 apiece. And it was small, and then it got to be very large, large enough so that one time he was at a dinner at an undersecretary of state, and I can't think of the name of that undersecretary of state, but the undersecretary of state got up and he said, Senator, I want to take you out and show you the plants that I bought from your nursery. And there used to be a judge in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals that one time we stopped when Sterry Waterman became Second Circuit Court judge. And he told the governor that whenever they went to their cottage in New Hampshire, they would stop at the Aiken Nursery and buy all their stuff to plant. That nursery, I remember Alice Holloway was one of the gals that was very good, particularly on the Christmas business. But she was a terrific person in that nursery.
Thanks, Gordon. 1-800-639-2211. Our number at Switchboard. Governor Aiken, throughout his career as senator, enjoyed pretty high ratings in terms of his popularity in Vermont. But he had his detractors, as you mentioned. I came across a quote in a 1961 Burlington Free Press editorial where they called him a pseudo-Republican and said he should just declare that he's a semi-socialist and be honest about it. How was he at taking criticism? How did the comments like that?
Actually, I think there was only one newspaper that supported him. I did not know him at the time he was running. And I think it was the Newport Express. I remember that when Governor Gibson was when Colonel Gibson became governor of Vermont, he used to delight in calling the governor and saying, hey, the Free Press is running you over the coals again. The Free Press did not like the governor.
And how did Governor Aiken take criticism?
The governor would laugh like hell when Ernest would call him and tell him, there's a great editorial against you in the Free Press. No, it never bothered him.
So he was pretty thick-skinned about it.
I only saw him get mad twice. One was when I was sitting in my office, which was next to him, and I heard a man yelling, and I heard the governor say, get the hell out of here. I opened the door, and the governor just stopped talking, and the guy walked out, and I said, what was that all about? And he said, the man said if I didn't vote a certain way, he'd never vote for me again. I told him to get the hell out of here. And the other time was he got mad at something Senator Brooke of Massachusetts said on the floor, and I can't remember what it was, but Steve Terry may know, because I had been in Vermont. My older sister had gotten ill, and when Steve met me at the airport when I got back to Washington, he said, don't ever leave again. And I said, what did the governor do? He said he got mad at Senator Brooks of Massachusetts.
You mentioned he had a cordial relationship with Richard Nixon, but of course Nixon resigned under the threat of impeachment. Did Governor Aiken feel betrayed by someone for whom he had admiration? Did he feel angry at Nixon at that point?
No, he didn't. And the interesting thing is, when we lived within 4 miles of Ambassador Bunker, there are two Ambassador Bunkers. Ambassador Bunker was in Vietnam at that time, at the latest post, and he had died, and Nixon came up to the funeral, but the governor was in the hospital, which was the last few weeks of his being alive, and Nixon came to the hospital to see the governor. And the governor told Nixon that history would surprise him because it would be kinder than Nixon thought it would be. And when I walked down the corridor, because the Secret Service told him he had to leave, he had to get back to New York, his daughter's birthday was that night, he said he couldn't believe that the governor's mind was as clear. He said all he wanted to talk about was political things.
George Aiken went to the White House when Nixon announced to a small group of people that he was going to resign, and apparently it was a very emotional
very
scene.
Emotional.
You saw him after he returned from that, what did he have to say about
Actually,
it?
Actually, I drove him down, and I was invited by one of the aides to sit in where I could hear it on television, and the governor said it was the saddest moment that he ever had gone through. The governor was also very close to Lyndon Johnson and very close to John Kennedy, because John Kennedy loved the governor, one reason, because he was a New Englander. But also the governor knew his grandfather, Honey Fitz, when he was mayor of Boston. He knew his father because he served with his father on the Hoover Commission. And he knew his brother-in-law, Sarge Shriver, because the governor was ranking Republican on foreign relations, the Peace Corps.
Let's go back to the phones and see this time if we can connect with Benny in Brandon. Hi, Benny.
Good evening. Thanks a lot
for waiting.
You're welcome. I was wondering if we could get any insight on the events when the governor assisted President Johnson with his foreign policy decision to around the Vietnam War.
I'm glad you asked me that. He was very upset, and the governor wasn't invited to the White House. And then the governor married me, and we were told that Mrs. Johnson asked one of the social secretaries, why hasn't Senator Aiken been at the White House lately?
Just to back up a little bit, Johnson was very upset?
Very upset.
With Governor Aiken,
well,
for what
reason?
Well,
because he said we should withdraw and
that
declare
That was the famous announcement.
And then the next thing we knew, we started getting invited to the White House again. But Leonard Marks was not only President Johnson's attorney, But at one point, Lyndon Johnson had appointed him head of the Voice of America. And one time, when he was still attorney for the president, he said to him one time, "Why did you get so mad when I told you that maybe you should do what Senator Aiken suggested?" He said, "Because I knew you were both goddamn right."
Before George Aiken got to that point where he made that famous announcement, to paraphrase, "Let's declare victory and get out of there," he was supportive of the Vietnam War up to a point.
Okay, let me tell you, because I should backtrack. Lyndon Johnson appointed Mike Mansfield chairman of a group to go to different countries, starting with Vietnam. On it was the senator from Maine. I've gone blank on his name. A senator from Delaware, Senator Inouye of Hawaii, and there was another one, plus the governor. There were five of them that went. And they got to Vietnam, and Cabot Lodge was the ambassador there at that time. And Mike Mansfield and the governor were asked by Cabot Lodge to stay at the embassy, and the other senators stayed somewhere at a hotel. And I think the governor said it was about 4:30 in the morning. They had Marines outside of their doors. A Marine knocked on the door and said, "The ambassador would like you and Senator Mansfield to go to the hospital. The North Vietnamese have bombed the hotel where a lot of Marines were staying." And when the governor and Mansfield and the ambassador got to the hospital, the governor said it was one bloody mess.
Is it fair to say that he was supportive of the effort in Vietnam up to a point?
And it was up to a point.
And what was that point at which he turned?
When they went around that group, they went to France, they went to Cambodia, and they went to other places. When they talked to everybody, they saw another side to the war, and they began to realize it wasn't winnable. It was a guerrilla war, really. You never knew where they were going to strike, and they had tunnels.
He did this as a member of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate. Here's a farm boy from Putney, from Vermont, a very rural and at the time an isolated state. Did he feel at all out of his element when he took that position, I think in the 1950s, on the Foreign Relations Committee and sort of was thrust into all these issues that were on a global scale?
No, he never felt that way. And it's interesting that Bill Fulbright was as different from Governor as black and white, and yet their relationship was an interesting one. Very, very close friends.
We'll continue our conversation after this short break. And a mention of what's coming up Tuesday on Switchboard. Bob Kinzel's guest will be Vermont's new Commissioner of Education, Ray McNulty. I'll take your calls on Vermont's school and on education issues Tuesday at 7 o'clock on Switchboard here on Vermont Public Radio. Tonight, our guest is Lola Aiken, wife of the late Senator and Vermont Governor George Aiken, as we talk about his 35 years in the U.S. Senate and also solicit her opinions on the day's events and welcome your calls at 1-800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Ray in Proctor. Hi, Ray.
Yes, Mrs. Aiken, I am interested in the fact that Governor Aiken began his U.S. Senate career during the Great Depression. And I wonder if you could contrast the challenges that he faced on issues facing young people during that period versus the challenges that young people face today.
You know, I didn't know him at that point. I met him when we went to Washington, and I have to tell you, the first year I didn't like him very well because typical Vermonter, I'd go in to tell him something, and he looked like he wasn't paying attention, and what really made me mad was he heard everything I said. So I don't know that period, but I do know this, that one of his big concerns that was the ability of young people to get jobs that paid enough for them to stay in Vermont. And one of the areas he was particularly concerned about was the Northeast Kingdom. It always worried him that the young people had to leave there to get good jobs. So that would have been his primary concern even then. He had a way of talking to young people. When we moved back to Vermont after he retired, we lived up on the mountain. And kids, young kids would come up and sit on the porch with him. And most of them wanted to start at the top. They'd ask about running for the Senate in the Vermont Senate. And he'd always say, start with your local community and build up to it. But he encouraged them to get into and get involved in politics, he used to say. Get involved in politics.
Ray, thanks for the call. Again, our number is 1-800-639-2211. Ed is calling from Norwich. Hi, Ed. Welcome to Switchboard.
Thank you, and good evening to Lola. This is Ed Janeway in Norwich.
Oh, yeah.
We have met before, and my father, as you know, was very close to Governor Aiken many years. And
you had a great dad.
I thank you very much. I found this program very interesting, and I was particularly interested in the comments about the senator's feelings towards McCarthy, because I remember how Senator Flanders, his Senate mate, really led the opposition to McCarthy, or sponsored, if I'm correct, the censure motion. And I thought kind of the two senators, particularly from a small state, would be both Republicans, would be sticking together on this issue. So I wondered why Senator or Governor Aiken might have been a little lukewarm on moving.
No, I wasn't so much lukewarm. And I think all the senators felt there was something wrong with Joe McCarthy at that point. And if you remember, he was ill after that. You know, he wasn't well after that. They all felt bad about having to censor him. But they thought he should be.
It was Flanders, I think, who got up on the Senate floor and made a speech.
Absolutely.
And that's something, if George Aiken had done that, I don't think anybody would have been surprised, but George Aiken didn't do that.
Yeah. I think they all hated to censor one of their own, but he needed it. He needed it. And I think there was, I can't remember who voted against censor, but I would say it was either Senator Dodd or it could have been Senator Long. You know, in a way, they liked him. But on that issue, he was just off his rocker on it. So I think that was it, Ed.
There was something called, I'm going to forget its name, the Declaration of Conscience.
Margaret Smith.
Right.
And the governor signed it.
Then the governor, that came out a few years before the censure that
absolutely.
Was directed at McCarthy.
He was very close to Margaret Smith. As a matter of fact, she came over the office one time, and he got up from his chair, and he said, Margaret, she was on the House side at that point. He said, Margaret, you're coming over here, so you might as well try it out. And she did. She came within 2 years. She became a senator.
When you look at the Republican Party today and the Republican Party when you were and George Aiken were active in it, any differences?
I think there are a lot alike. I think sometimes they need to count to 20 sometimes when they say something. Because the party is a good party. But I think sometimes they don't count to 20 before they say something.
George Aiken was often on the outs, it seems, with the party hierarchy. I mean, it began when he was governor.
Actually, they tried to defeat him a couple times when he was in a long time. Mm-hmm. Particularly the last time he ran, they encouraged somebody to run against him.
For Senate.
Yeah.
And I think when they were afraid he was going to run for his third term as governor, they tried and perhaps he decided not to run for that term. But and there's a famous George Aiken speech from 1938 when he was governor, which he gave at the Waldorf Astoria to the on Lincoln Day, a day designed to celebrate the Republican Party and Abraham Lincoln, in which he really lambasted the party.
Yes, he did. And, you know, once in a while, somebody should just point out where they're off the track. And he did in that speech.
Again, this goes back to a time before you
before me,
were working
but I,
for him. But I wonder if you have any insight into knowing they must have known George Aiken and his politics, why would they have invited him in the first place to talk for a Lincoln Day ceremony?
I have a hunch that there was a fellow from Vermont who was involved in that New York Republican committee. And while I don't know it, I have a sneaking suspicion he could have been the agent that got it done.
Here's a quote from that 1938 speech. "The greatest praise I can give to Lincoln on this his anniversary is to say that he would be ashamed of his party's leadership today." I'm not sure they were ready to hear that day set aside to celebrate the party. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Barbara in North Callis. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, good evening. Hi, Mrs. Aiken. It's been wonderful to hear about the past and all that you've done. I'd like to hear about some of the activities and projects you're involved in today.
Well, I'm involved in a lot. My latest one is I'm honorary chair for the Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice, and I'm involved with the Vermont Historical Society in this campaign on Spalding High School. I'm on the board of the Aiken Lectures, and I'm on the executive board and committees of the Friends. And I like to keep that brain of mine moving.
The Friends of the State House and the Historical Society's moved to a big new or a big old location.
Well, they had to make a move because so much of the historical material was in the floodplain.
And what happens as part of the Aiken Lecture Series?
This coming year is going to be on energy, and I think that's a terrific subject because what used to worry the governor was don't depend too much on outside of the United States, particularly food and energy. And I've thought about it a lot lately because 60% of our fuel comes from Saudi Arabia. So if all of a sudden they decide they're not going to send it, we're in trouble. He was very conscious of being able to take care of ourselves in an emergency.
Barbara, thanks for the call. On to Brookfield now and a call from Betty. Hi, Betty.
It's got to be Betty Lord.
Well, hopefully we'll find out.
Or in that area.
Again, our number is 1-800-639-2211. Betty, you with us?
Barbara.
Well, we just talked to Barbara in North Callis, and perhaps there's a Barbara in Brookfield, too. Barbara? Well, while we're straightening that out, I'll interject another question that seems sort of apropos since there's all this talk of Governor Howard Dean running for president. There was a draft Aiken presidential movement. When did that take place and what was behind it?
It was in that area around, as I remember, it was that fellow that I said engineered his speaking in New York that was trying to engineer his. Wasn't it in the 40s? Was it in the 40s?
What was his response to other people's
said
entreaties
to
run for president?
No, he always said he just was happy being a Vermonter.
So while he climbed very rapidly up through the political ranks in Vermont, Senate was...
He never took it seriously.
Uh-huh. Did he have... You've mentioned his relationship with Nixon, and it sounded like he had admiration for Nixon. How about... He served through the terms of six presidents in all. What was his relation like with some of those others, beginning with Roosevelt?
Roosevelt, actually, he and Mrs. Roosevelt worked on a lot of things together, education. He used to go down to, after Roosevelt. Yes, he used to go down to the White House, and he had a fellow who was his press man, who was from Northfield, Bill, begins with an H, anyway, from Northfield. And the governor used to go out to dinner with this fellow that was his press man, and Governor Gibson, who was then in the service, and Governor Aiken. He used to go down and talk to Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one time he talked about one of the governors thinking it was terrible that Vermont had to pay $5,000 for some land in Vermont, and Roosevelt thought it was hilarious that a Vermont governor thought $5,000 was a lot for the land. The governor was close to Truman. Used to have breakfast with Truman. And
I think some people would seem to see the same qualities in both.
Very much, very much. And went down a lot when he was president. As a matter of fact, when he was down one time, President Truman told him that Roosevelt didn't tell him anything about the nuclear bomb. I think it was that thing, but it was one thing, and I think it was the nuclear bomb. And he didn't seem to know much about what was going on in the military. And the governor said, Colonel Gibson, and Colonel Gibson had served with Truman in the Senate, because when his father died, the governor appointed Ernest Gibson to take his place for the time remaining. And the governor said, well, Colonel Gibson is over in the Pentagon in whatever the agency, intelligence agency. And Truman said to the governor, well, tell him to come and see me. And the governor came back and forgot about it, because you don't tell Ernest to go see the president unless the president tells you, call Ernest. So the secretary to Truman called up and she said, President Truman wants to know when Ernest Gibson is coming. And the governor said, I'll get him. When does the president want him? So Ernest went to the White House and told him that his boss was in charge of intelligence, and that he would think it's funny that he was at the White House and not the boss. So he said, he will keep you informed, and I'll get in touch with him immediately. So when Ernest, when there was a vacancy in district judge, President Truman told the governor that he was going to appoint Ernest, because none of the Democrats in Vermont had worked very hard for him, thinking he was going to lose the election. And he appointed a Republican, Ernest Gibson. That's how Ernest Gibson gave up the governorship to become district judge.
Let's return to the phones and see if we can connect with our Brookfield listener. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Lola.
Is this Betty?
It's Betty in Brookfield.
I said I knew it was Betty.
Hi, dear. I'm so glad that the previous speaker mentioned that you'd served on so many boards. I, for one, am delighted that you served on the Vermont Historical Society Board. Lola, I'm calling because so many people have been interested in your comments about the governor and the nursery that I thought you might want to mention his book. Pioneering with Wildflowers.
Betty, he had lots of books. He had Pioneering with Wildflowers, which is now in paperback. And then he had Pioneering with Fruits and Berries, Aiken, Senate Diary. So he's done a lot of it. But Betty, I've got another committee, I tell you. She's with NECI.
The New England Culinary Institute.
Yeah, I'm on the scholarship committee with NECI.
Betty, thanks for the call. 1-800-639-2211, our number at Switchboard here at Vermont Public Radio. Our guest is Lola Aiken. She spent 35 years in Washington with Senator George Aiken, his long tenure as a Vermont senator. Before that, he was a governor of Vermont, a lieutenant governor, and a legislator from Putney. 1-800-639-2211. In terms of his popularity back here in Vermont during those 35 years, were there specific positions, any one position he took that for which he was particularly unpopular, he took a lot of flack for?
I love to tell this story. I can't remember what the issue was, and nobody else in the office can remember, because I've tried to find out if anybody remembered. But something he said irritated particularly the Chittenden County area, and about 4:30 one night, the governor got a call from a man in Burlington, and he said, Governor, I want to tip you off. There are 40 people that have just left on a bus. They're going to hit you at 8 o'clock in the morning because they're madder than hell at you over this issue. And the governor said to the office, make sure we have coffee first thing in the morning and donuts, because they're going to be terribly tired traveling all night. So they walked through the door, and they really looked exhausted. And they couldn't believe the governor had coffee and donuts, and he told them to come on in with the coffee and donuts. And he said, you sent me to Washington for me to use my judgment about what I learn about issues. and I believe this to be the right way to vote. They went out of there with smiles.
What was it they were upset about?
It was the way he voted on an issue, and I can't remember what the issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he voted against issues once in a while. I remember one man said, I met her in hell at the way he voted, but Lola, I'll vote for him again when he runs, because he says he does what he really believes to be right.
Let's go to St. Johnsbury and talk to Art this evening. Hi, Art. Welcome to Switchboard.
Great program this evening. I'm really enjoying it. I was a youth in the Northeast Kingdom that the governor was concerned about.
Good.
In the late 50s, early 60s. And I put a lot of hours in on the Sleepers River Watershed Project. And that project employed lots of young people in the area, and we did a lot of good research. And I can remember one day you and the governor came to tour the watershed unannounced, and there were no government cars in the parking lot, and you and the director of the project, Martin Johnson, looked around, and there was my old convertible sitting in the parking lot. So I put the top down and jumped in and took a tour of the watershed in the backseat of my convertible with a wet bathing suit sitting on the back seat.
That was a federal project, Art?
Yes, it was. Department of Agriculture.
I hope you made some money when you left the Northeast Kingdom.
Well, I'm back here now.
Good.
But spent some time in Wisconsin, and I think we'll eventually end up back in the Northeast Kingdom.
Good.
It's a wonderful project, and it's still going on.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call. Let's return to Montpelier and talk to Robbie. Hi, Robbie.
This is a very, very interesting program, Mrs. Aiken, and I'd like to ask you a bit about yourself. We've heard some wonderful things about Governor Aiken, and I'm wondering about you and your young, your youth, your young girlhood, and your young womanhood. Can you tell us a little bit about your early life before you got involved in politics?
You bet. I was very lucky. My father and mother came from the Tuscany area in Italy. And I was born in this country, but the first thing my mother wanted was to be able to learn English. And I think she must have attended the first adult school because she had two women. One was a teacher in the high school in Montpelier, and one was a debutante, and her name was Bancroft. And when I told her son this story, he said he didn't know it. But those two people offered to teach any immigrant who wanted to learn the language. And the minute my mother and my father really got used to living in this country, they became interested in politics. And they voted. They became American citizens, and they voted. So I got that. But when I went to work for the Secretary of State's office way back before I went to Washington, every chance I got, I would sneak up when the legislature was in session. I still love politics.
You still stay up on all the current events?
You bet. And I'm annoyed that young people do not listen to television, radio, or read the newspapers and get both sides of an issue, because they'll tell me they're for somebody, and then I'll say, well, where did you read that? Oh, we don't read the newspaper. You know, the newspapers and radio and televisions, they always tell it. I said, how can you make a judgment if you don't read everything?
Robbie, thanks for the call. To Burlington now, and Brian, who's on the phone for Lola Aiken. Hi, Brian.
Hi, and hi, Lola. This is Brian Lloyd, and I think it was more than 22 years ago that we visited you at the farm, and we have wonderful pictures of the children and George sitting on the porch together, the senator sitting on the porch together.
Uh-huh.
And the girls were married this summer. Both of my daughters were married.
As I remember, you gave us some flowers to plant there.
We did. What a memory. I wanted to ask you about some of the first ladies that you've known, and sort of describe them in the same way that you've talked about the presidents in terms of the kinds of contributions that they've made to the country.
I loved Pat Nixon. She was so down to earth, and I remember Helen Thomas telling me once she was her favorite, too. Pat Nixon was very sensitive. I remember that I had broken my ankle, and the Mexicans were coming, and the governor was on that committee, And he told me I'd had to go to the White House, and I was standing with crutches. And the president said, "Lola, do you want me to autograph your a cast?" And I said, "Please." He not only sent me 10 pictures, but he sent me the pen. But Pat Nixon came along while they were all standing in the East Room. And she, "What happened to you?" I said, "I walked behind a car in Vermont and slipped and broke my ankle." In 2 seconds, she had a chair for me to sit on. She was very sensitive. And another one I liked was Gerry Ford's wife. When I first married the governor, she called me immediately and asked me to be third vice president of the Congressional Republicans. And I said to her, "You know, I work full-time, even though the governor took me off the payroll because he thought it was a conflict of interest." And she said, "But this will be a way for you to get acquainted with the wives." And the one that really helped me a lot was Muriel Humphrey.
The vice president's wife.
Vice president's wife.
Brian, thanks for the call. Let's go to Terry, who's dialing us from Springfield this evening. Terry, welcome to Switchboard.
Thank you. Lola.
Yes.
Betty's up in Brookfield mentioned the books that your husband was responsible for, but there's also another book that really, to me, made a solid picture of the personality and the thoughts and the attitude and the concepts of your husband, and that was Speaking from Vermont.
Oh, I forgot that one.
Yes.
And you know, that is so difficult to get because that had a very, very light distribution.
That's a book that came out in the 30s?
When he was governor of Vermont. And one time, a fellow from the New York Times came in to interview the governor, and he had a copy of that book. And he said to me on his way into the governor's office, he said, "I've read this book, and the governor was way ahead of his time."
I think that book, as you say, is hard to find.
It's very hard.
The state library here in Montpelier, I understand, has a copy.
Has it?
Yeah. Terry, thanks a lot for the call. You're your own person, Lola, and I wonder if you and George Aiken ever or often had disagreements in terms of issues in politics.
You bet. Well, not necessarily. Well, not necessarily. Yeah, but I disagreed sometimes. But one time, it was the last time he was going to speak to the Vermont legislature, and he had all the staff come in to hear that last speech. And they all told him it was wonderful. And I sat there and said nothing. And when they left, he looked at me and he said, "You didn't think it was so great?" And I said, "Well, let's put it this way. I think you can do better." And he said, "If you're so damn smart, why aren't you the United States Senator?" And I said, "That's why I'm so smart. I'm not the United States Senator." So I turned around and walked out. 10 minutes later, he buzzed me and he says, "Sit down." So he said, "What's wrong with this?" So I told him. Yes, I disagreed with him. One time, one of the reporters, one of the top reporters says, "Well, Lola, I guess you agree with the governor on everything." And I said, "No, I've got a brain of my own." And he laughed like the devil.
Do you think you ever influenced the way he looked at or voted on a particular issue?
I don't. I'm not sure. But I think all of us in the office, because we would report back to the governor what we picked up, and the staff would do exactly the same thing. If they heard something while they were having lunch with something, they would walk into his office, and he was always tipped off.
Mm-hmm. Today, Vermont has no Republican members of Congress. We've got two independents and one Democrat. Knowing what you know about Vermont politics, what you know about George Aiken and his politics, is he electable in today's Vermont?
I said to somebody that it would be harder for the governor to be elected, I thought. And this person said, "No, Lola, not the way he campaigned." So I don't know. He got around the state. And it wasn't political getting around the state. Mm-hmm. But when they came home, when they had recesses, he didn't want to go to Europe. He didn't want to go to Asia. He wanted to come to Vermont. And Bill Fulbright said to him once, "Governor, you've got to go somewhere because you make other people look bad." And we did go to South America before I married him.
Lola Aiken, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program this evening.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Again, Tuesday on Switchboard, Bob Kinzel's guest will be Vermont's new Commissioner of Education, Ray McNulty. The director and engineer for Switchboard is Neil Charnoff. The production assistant is Meg Little. I'm Steve Zind. Thanks for listening, and good night.